Questions put to a specific member of the panel or to the whole panel as a team. So would anybody like to start that off? Anybody question to start with? Bob, you have.
Well, I've been thinking that Sean was mentioning the methodological aspects of time. And methodologically, the quantity which is most accurately measured is time, or its inverse, which is frequency. We find that it's actually involved in just about every definition, scientific definition of quantities. So at one end you have that amazingly accurate ability to measure time. On the other hand, you have the fundamental physicists who can't agree on what the ontology of time is. They all disagree with each other. And then you have the subjective aspects, which we've just been hearing about, which are even more varied in their interpretations or understanding. And I just wonder what members of the panel make of that. How could it be the most accurate quantity that we have in the world? And yet, we have so much disagreement about what it means for us.
I certainly don't argue with the precision that is being achieved and continues to be achieved. I suppose my point is that it's to do with the change of something in the measurement terms, the number of cycles. Each cycle is a change. Moving the hand of a clock, if you want to go back the other way and say it's a form of change. And I'm not sure people look at it the same way in terms of time being so intimately involved with measurable changes. Otherwise, they wouldn't really talk about the arrow or the flow. Well, they might talk about the flow, not the arrow of time. I'm not sure that the people who write about in your novels, for example, they're using it, I can say, as a metaphor. Metaphor for growth, I don't know, for maturity or maturing, which I suppose is change, not in the same way as you can measure the change of a cyclical wave. I think it's just almost a different meaning of the word.
Alan, you mentioned.
I'm not quite sure whether I understood what exactly is being asked, but time exists, so otherwise it wouldn't be we wouldn't be able to slow it down. Either through velocity or gravity. So there is something. So if this something is a field like the Higgs boson, for example, which gives mass to everything else, or an electromagnetic field, or whether it's a quantum fluctuation of some sort, very tiny that we can't perceive it, but it exists, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to slow it down by one or the other. This is not, I have to emphasize that it's not just our perception that it slows down, there are experiments. They did it on particles. We were talking over lunch. How do you know that it slowed down? Because, for example, a particle has a life of 1 second, and when they shoot them at CERN at nearly the speed of light, it lives for 2 seconds. So it's really so long. I really don't know. I mean, physicists don't agree what this thing we call time is, but there must be something. It is an existing entity.
Oh, did you
want to? Yeah, that last phrase interests me, an existing entity.
An entity, characteristic.
I just hear words rather than know anything about physics. Because there's no point in my giving any opinion about physics, really. 1963, physics with chemistry at level to my limit. It's all changed since then, anyway. When people say, does time exist, or is time real, or what is the ontology of time, to me that's just words. It seems, what is absolutely clear is that some things happen after other things. They don't all happen simultaneously. In fact, the very word happen wouldn't make any sense if that were not the case. So, in that sense, time exists, not in some metaphysical general or some entity called time that can go faster or slower or whatever. It's just the fact that things happen after other things. So that's, to me, the simple answer to the first question. And even things like time speeds up or time slows down, those are words, and it's not necessarily the best way of describing whatever it is that the experiments show. The science can do experiments with results, but to describe the results in certain words is not a scientific exercise, it's an exercise of language, and it may be that the scientists are not using the normal language in the way that is most appropriate. I don't know, but it seems to me that an awful lot of mysticism or mysterianism comes out of the discussion of time, which needn't. If we just try and talk simply, things happen after other things. Simple.
Maybe when the particle slows down or lasts for 2 seconds, it's not a characteristic of time, it's a characteristic of the particle.
Yeah.
It's a bit knackered because it's going so fast and it decides to slow down. Maybe it's inherent to the particle. Rather than saying time slows, no, the particle slows. You can have more wiggly things for the particle to cover a distance or just to live. So it's a characteristic of that. Yeah. I know what it's like to move fast and then get mad. So it's a very human thing.
I like the idea of time being some awareness of sequence. That things happen at different times, one before another. But that then enters the argument about causality. And that's perhaps a different jar. We don't want to put our hands in at the moment.
So, Paul.
Just going to comment on what should have been said. The idea of time slowing as defined by the particle example does seem to be a little bit self-referential. It's as if you were expressing the question in terms of how much time do you get in the universe of time. And you can play the guitar, you can get twice as much time in the universe of time as you had before. And I know that's not quite what you said, but that's the way it comes across. So that's not really a question. What I'd like to do is sort of ramble for a moment about something and see if that turns into a question. The concept of dimension was mentioned by a number of you. We didn't define it, although I think we all know what we think it is, and I think we could have said that to that. Sean, I think you've got a slide with, say, 7 dimensions, according to your terminology. We refer to the normal 4 Newtonian, which are familiar to us in this room, and then string theory might be 11 or it might not, and so on and so forth. Time. I'm wondering if there are any other types of time, or dimensions. Clearly time stands out. All the others, I think, we presume are spatial, do we not? If we talk about string theory, then we presume they are spatial in nature. I wonder if there's anything to be gleaned by pursuing that thought process. You know, if we want to decide where we are in the UK, we could measure where we are in terms of our nearest point to the M6 or something. You can still probably get a pretty good opportunity of finding where it was.
But is time linked to space? So this idea that, you know, with Einstein you can substitute.
Yeah,
so somehow it's a strange dimension that is actually linked to space.
So do we in fact, and we have one, in any case, one true dimension, which is space-time, and all the rest is unnecessary complexity.
But which one?
Well, I suppose you could argue that.
I'm not a physicist. I'm a physicist wannabe. I'm not a physicist. I'm a physicist wannabe. But there is a big issue in physics, which is trying to join together quantum mechanics and relativity when it comes to gravity. So there are some new now ideas with the quantum loop gravity. Carlo Rovelli, the one whom you mentioned, is the one of the co-founders of it. I won't go into that because it's another can of worms. What I mean by dimensions in string theory, M theory joined five different types of string theory together. It's called M theory. And M theory works mathematically with 11 dimensions. One of time, 10 of space. What I mean is slightly different from what Sean means by dimensions. They are still coordinates, if you want, but they are coordinates that you can't see because they are so tiny that they are in hyperspace. They're coordinates in hyperspace. That is the best, the easiest way to see it. So you can't even, your brain can't even imagine how these are. And this is all theoretical. I really don't know whether this will ever be proven, but I have to add something else, because the particle example, you might see it as a little bit, as Sean said, as a little bit relating to the particle and not to time itself. But they took a very precise atomic clock up in the atmosphere, and they had another one identical which were synchronized down on Earth, and the one actually going round, so a bit away from gravity, I said the clock ticks differently here to my legs, to my feet, and they really ticked differently.
Yes.
And they shouldn't tick differently if time didn't exist, if gravity and speed didn't affect time. So that the particle might relate to the particle itself, let us say, like, I don't think so. I think it's really evidence of the speed effect. But this is a little bit, you can't attribute it to the clock itself because they are identical. I mean, you could, you know, and the difference is exactly what relativity predicts. So it predicts 0.0001 difference, and it's exactly what they got. You know, but I think you needed this as a.
So would you conclude there is no objective time?
Time is subjective in reality, then time beats differently here than it beats there, up there. So there's no. Relativity uses frame of reference. Frame of reference. So even Barber uses frame of reference. He actually has these props as well. Frame of reference. My frame, our frame of reference here is more or less the same, but the ones on top of us, for example, they have a different frame of reference. Of course, the difference in ticking is so slight that we don't perceive it, huh? But astronauts travel in the future, for example, because they go fast and they are away from they go fast, that's why they travel so in the future. But then if you travel around a black hole, then you're slowing down, and you travel in the future as well, even more, because gravity is stronger. Now, the stronger the gravity, so I don't think it's an illusion, I don't think it's only a construct. It's a construct in the sense that we say 5 o'clock, and it doesn't mean anything. We just arbitrarily decided to split it.
So in your slides, you had one slide which had three pictures of presences, which was just a, like your Tristan's one.
Yeah, the thrust one slice. Yeah.
Then there was the path, and then there was the cube with everything. Yeah. So that pushes you towards your cube.
It pushes me towards the cube, unfortunately, because it's counterintuitive that the past exists and the present exists and the future exists as well, because that's deterministic then, and it becomes there's no freedom. And that is the big mystery.
Issue,
right? Would you want to respond?
Well, yes, the three bits in the sort of block theory conference. I'm inclined to believe presentism. We have memories of the past, and we may have shared memories of the past, and that gives us a certain degree of confidence that it actually happened. You say, all right, biscuits for tea. You can say the same. So maybe we had biscuits for tea. Prove it. Difficult. The future, we could live perhaps in hope of the future, or sometimes in despair of the future, but we could cease to exist a millisecond or an hour from now. We don't know. On the basis that we've been going long enough since somewhere, maybe we're going to go longer. But that bit that says we've been long enough somewhere may not exist either. So it's hugely different from thinking boldly that we've got another million years before the heat death of the sun, or whatever it may be. Maybe we haven't. We don't know. You can't prove it. But we live in expectation of the future. Now, if you believe in prophecy, someone says that, in the year 1999, we're all going to die because the world will come to an end. Equally wrong. Or did he?
Just assimilation.
But the idea that time is beating, I still don't like the idea of time doing things. Things change, and we have a device that measures, let's say, cycles or something, that says that changed 3 minutes, as we multiply up, 3 minutes before that. That gives us a sense of time. But time didn't beat. What happened was there was a change. We counted some more changes and said something else has happened. Therefore, there is a time difference.
So we measure something that we think is correlated with time, but we don't know what time
is. Yeah, we don't know what time is. I mean, it's to say, there's an exercise for us tonight over when we sleep. What are the characteristics of this thing we call time? That it beats? Does it? What beats? Ah, where you've got, waves out seizing clocks. Do you weigh it? No, but we use bits out of a cesium clock to show you what kilograms. I'm very much a presentist, carpe diem. I don't think time does anything. I think changes of other things have intervals.
So you wouldn't plant a tree then?
Personally, that's gone to the heading of gardening. I have moral reasons for gardening.
Yeah.
But I would happily plan to go to a concert next Thursday. On the grounds that if next Thursday doesn't exist, I won't have wasted my money. I've got a concert.
Stephen's question.
I tend to agree with Sean. I think it's you can't say that time speeds or slow down. It seems to be conceptually incoherent to say that, because how fast does time run? What, 7 seconds? It's a meaningless concept. I think time is a basic concept. Processes speed or slow down relative to time.
So how do you explain the slowing down of
the two processes going at different speeds? It's not time itself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hey, express the speed. You can't express it in
seconds per second. Well, Sean was also saying that we're really accurate in measuring these things that are correlated with time. So we can take this really accurate measuring device for the clock on Earth and the clock up there, and they tell us a different number.
Yeah, just the difference between accuracy and precision.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the thing that you take us, you are changing the environment, and therefore there's no reason to say that it will continue to operate in the same way as it operates in the first environment. Gravity will affect it.
So it's due to imprecision then, that they measure it differently. They measure it down differently. You say, but that's the thing, relativity out of the window, huh?
No, it doesn't at all, because if we measure something to time, keep it time for a moment, on cycles of an excited cesium atom. We then take this excitable cesium atom somewhere else, and it suddenly appears that that's going a bit quicker than that, or a bit slower than that, or whatever. And so what? Different environment. Up there, different gravity, different speed, different something else. It's just a different environment. So if I'm measuring time here, and then I go over there and measure it, you can measure my temperature now. You put me in an oven for half an hour, at regulo 7, it's still me, but my temperature has changed.
So do you think that the time itself doesn't change, but the things we correlate can sometimes change?
Yeah, I think time is to do with sequence and before and after.
But your time dilation equations don't take distance into consideration.
They don't take distance into consideration. They take speed. Which is distance per second, which is meters per second, let's say. You change the environment, C changes. I know C is in vacuo, but the speed of light, you can change it in your bathroom. You don't need big science to change the speed of light. not tachyons, not tachyons, what is it, the radiation, sound current radiation? It comes out of, run things through a bubble bath. You can change the speed of light.
Tachyons are faster.
That's a constant. But you can change the speed of light.
Well, how about, a parallel with size? I seem to remember reading somewhere that if something's going along the speed of light, it gets shorter.
Yeah.
Now, we wouldn't say that distance changes. We might say that the length of something changes, it gets shorter. We wouldn't say that distance itself is a different concept or behaves differently in those circumstances. We would say that the object is shorter in those circumstances or looks shorter from somewhere else. And similarly, I think I'm going with Sean here, that when we say time slows down or time quickens up, which seems to me conceptually, incomprehensible, what we mean is that the whatever it is that's doing the cesium atom or whatever is doing it faster than it is down here, or appears to us to be doing it faster than it would do if we were up there.
So you're talking about duration.
Well, as if faster means it's doing more of those per. More of those per second as we see it.
So that you have a cesium clock up there, and the duration between one oscillation of the cesium and the next, as seen from the Earth, is different.
If that's what it is that we're experimenting, But to say that time goes more slowly seems to me. Someone said self-referential at one point. I think yes.
Not for the person affected by gravity or speed. Time for that person remains unaffected. If I had to live 100 years, I would still live 100 years. But in comparison to the other frame of reference, which is not affected by gravity or speed in the same way, I would be going faster. My time would be beating slower. My clock would be beating slower compared to them.
Yeah.
But this has real effects. It's not because my clock is less efficient or is subject to some force which the other clock isn't to. It's because they will get old and I will not get as old as them.
So would I be right then to say if a photon was created outside the universe and it travelled all the way and I was sunbathing and hit me in the nose, in my reference frame it would have taken a million years to travel a billion miles or whatever. in the photons reference frame, it was created and hit me on the nose.
Exactly.
Straight
yeah.
Well,
yeah. What I mean. That's what I mean. Yeah. That's what I mean.
I just wanted to express complete ignorance of all this. But I think some of the discussion is about how we measure time, and that is to some extent arbitrary, as I think has been pointed out today. And some of the discussion is how time seems to operate in certain contextual circumstances. Now, that's still not quite answering the question about what fundamentally is time. And I mean, I just thought to myself the other day, if I hear a church bell toll in the evening, right, then I hear another, no, stop the word, then, I hear another bell toll. They are identical tolls. How can I distinguish between them? I could give them a number. I could call one one and this one two. But that doesn't work enough because I have two apples here. One and two, and they're separated by space. But what separates the first toll from the second toll? Well, that's what I would call time. Time is the distance between events which occur sequentially. How do you measure it? But I don't know if that's any help or not. But it tries to get beyond.
Macro world is of help, and the micro world is a bit difficult.
In the micro world,
the micro is a bit difficult. But Sean mentioned two great physicists, Feynman and Sean Carroll. Sean Carroll is the, if I am not mistaken, he is the chair in Caltech. I forgot Feynman chair in Caltech actually. So before him there was Feynman and then someone else and then. Him. So Sean Carroll brings this example. I have two twins, one on Earth. Two twins are identical in all senses, or most senses. One stays on Earth, and the other one takes a rocket and goes to Alpha Centauri at nearly the speed of light. For the one on the rocket. The trip took maybe a few days because he went and came back nearly at the speed of light. He finds his other twin on Earth, an old person, and he is maybe a few days older than he was when he left. And to me, this, because I'm not a physicist, don't forget, so I didn't do it myself, this I read. what Sean Carroll is proposing is what Einstein is proposing, basically. That time ticked differently for the person on Earth than for the person on the rocket, in the rocket. So there is no, you can't attribute this to malfunctioning of something or to a different functioning of something. It is the time passed differently for the persons involved. And they, at the initial frame of reference, they were exactly the same because they had the same reference frame. But when that changed, because he travelled fast, nearly at the speed of light, because if he travelled at the speed of light, he would become of infinite mass, like Sean's, like Sean proposed, I mean, and it would be impossible to move. Infinite mass, you can't move.
Yes, the only thing is that that's obviously a thought experiment,
that
and we haven't actually managed
to
run the experiment.
No, what I mean is, you're right. What I mean is that the ticking of the clock in space and on Earth and the particle is interpreted by physicists, including Sean Carroll, as meaning this.
Yes.
Not as meaning a different ticking.
I think we've done experiments to demonstrate a principle, but maybe not that.
Exactly, yeah. Not this.
Yeah.
This we will do it.
I think Adrian says.
Yes, actually, I just wanted to make a technical correction to the thing about photons.
Oh, okay.
No important, but I think we're kind of getting bogged down in the physics, you know, not physical society, but the philosophical society.
That's true.
You're right. So if we then go back to thinking about some Aristotle's categories then, so I wonder in all of the things that have been said, where is the basic sort of substance? So Sean gave us an excellent thing, I think, in looking at those various constants, and you were saying time comes up in all of these. So we get the idea that it's put in there as a relation between these different things. And we can talk particularly in what Barry was saying, it's come up in the other talks about the quality of time. You know, we feel these different sort of qualities of it, and quantity as well. But what about the substance? You know, we've got the substance of a glass that we can then say we can attach these other properties to it. But does time have substance?
No.
Maybe that's something to do with the...
Bob has the answer, yeah.
That's just an Aristotelian thing, isn't it, substance? No, I don't see why time should have substance, or what that would mean.
The way we get models is we divide your two points. One, words. On the other hand, I've always liked my axioms. And if one could build a more useless there, basically time is one of seven dimensions, and its characteristic is that dimension is where one thing happens after another. And what you said, you can't reverse it. You get to a highly superficial, admittedly, starting block, but then saying, okay, having got there, there are all sorts of different aspects. So Barry and I have the privilege of doing epistemology for our BPE course, where, you know, essay is particularly then this table is not quite as straightforward as that. There are perceptions about it. The colour of it, the feel, the proof of existence. Lower, you can bang on for hours, but at least as a starting point, this is a dimension which is something to do with the material world. So really going back to Barry's dimensions is, I think, one of the fascinating things. You know, we talk with an uncertain basis. There's no axiomatic starting point. Therefore, everybody hairs off in different arguments. If we're the starting block, you can then go aspect after aspect after aspect with a sort of a topography of different aspects. And for Barry's excellent piece, one of those aspects is not just past, present, future. It's not just sort of atomic time and travelling in time, etc. It's also the perception of time. And I think what you do is you just put that on your back and say this is a further aspect that we need to have a debate. I think without that answer, I don't know what we come back to me, but without, I know words, without a starting point, any discussion about time becomes messy.
I think it depends on the point of view you want to take. For example, Adrian said it's not philosophy, it's more physics. But the experiment I've just proposed could be both in reality. So the twins experiment could be both, because it's a thought experiment, and what do philosophers do? Well, the experiments. Nozick, for example, had this barrel, a thought experiment, a brain in the barrel. How do I know whether I'm in a barrel? How do I know I'm not in a simulation? So, you know what I mean? So, it depends on the point of view. When, if you want to take a metaphysical point of view, like I did, more or less, the ontological point of view, then you can't, how shall I put it, look at the epistemological point of view or at the ethical point of view. You could, but you have a preference of a point of view. And my preference is metaphysical. But I base my metaphysics on physics, because it's the safest bet I have. If I had to base my metaphysics on just my impressions, for example, on time, then it wouldn't be me. It would be someone else, you know.
But I'll start with this philosophy. Is you haven't got to have an exclusive preference. You know, that's your preference. That's
yes, of course, definitely. Definitely.
As long as I think you've got your axiom to start with,
yeah,
you can err off wherever you want.
Yes, of course, of course. No, no, and I would take it from the same perspective as Berry would have taken it if I chose the epistemological or the literary. Yes. Definitely so. And the same with if I had to take the logic. But I decided to take a more metaphysical point of view, so of course if I try then to cross over to the other field, I would go out of my research and I would be a little bit lost, you know what I mean? So I tried to keep to my small world. So that's the reason why I took this approach, of course, that's the only reason.
Stephen, did you have another question? No. Sorry.
Just as a lull, I'll try and overtake again. There's a guy in England, possibly with his tongue in his cheek, who said he wishes to change his age by default.
Oh, yeah, right.
And you see the rationale, if you can change your marital status and your sexual status and so on according to choice, then you should be able to change other things. Now, actually, had you been in Alpha Centauri at close to the speed of light, you'd be quite sympathetic.
I would like to do that.
My question is, why are we so outraged at the suggestion? Because I presume we kind of are. And just if I put myself in his place, if his personal entropy is less than the speed of decay and the rest of it, does he have a point? So I raise it, it's a frivolous point, but does it
relate
to deep thoughts?
No, right. So I'm going to declare myself as 3.5. Now, you may say that is stupid, because yeah. I can't be 3.5. Right, could I be 4? Could I be 5? Could I be 55? At some point, you're going to turn from yes to a no, or your no to a yes. I could declare myself to be 69, and you'd probably say, that's all right. If I declared myself 9, you say it wouldn't. So you're going to have a different yardstick for measuring an age thing. He can call himself 4. I don't care. I'd probably care for him and, you know, pay for a nurse. But, you know, if he wants to be 4, he can be 4.
No, that's very different. But it's not.
He can call himself whatever he wants. That's not what he then is. I think you ask for axioms. You ask for an axiom. I beg your pardon. I need to go ahead and say, I haven't got my glasses on. Axioms. I put up something, I call them not quite the 95 Theses. Don't quite why. And these weren't, you know, statements, categoric statements of truth necessarily. Anything more than the 95 Theses were. Nothing is, things happen, I said. The world is made up of events, not permanent in time. We understand the world by studying change. Now, these may not be acceptable axioms for you, but you know, you may shoot them down, but then you'd have a reason for shooting them down, and maybe you progress. So much of the point of time is we're conflating two things. One is the measurement of something, and looking at the dimension, I use that term as I used it, time is measured in seconds. And seconds are measured in terms of cycles, which is reciprocal. So, but it's a repetition of change, and the number of those changes, cycles, which give us an idea of time, which we arbitrarily call seconds. There's a quantity of those equal seconds. And the thing is, you know, what are we talking about? We're talking about a measurement to begin with, and then we don't talk about time. Now, if the chap goes around the universe and comes back, he may only have aged 5 years. That is a biological consequence of travelling
through gravitational field stroke at the speed of light.
So he actually is
only aged a certain period. Biologically, his body clock has been different. Now, does he experience the 50 years it takes him, or does it feel to him mentally? I mean, could he have read 50 books, or could he have read 500 books in his journey time, compared to his twin who stays on Earth? I don't know the answer to that question, but to my mind, it is a biological consequence. His body slows down, he therefore physically cannot age as quickly as his twin. Well, I don't know whether he appreciates. Maybe his thought processes are slow. Maybe his neurons fire.
The theory says that it doesn't affect him.
He doesn't
realize.
Think he's done anything other than gone, come back, and look at me. But if he had really been away for 50 years, has he done 50 years worth of academic study? Has he urinated that number of times that he would normally urinate in 50 years? You know, and so on. I don't know. He could know.
The theory. The theory says that he wouldn't be, he wouldn't realize that so much time has passed on Earth. For him, it's just 5 years.
Not 50 years.
So
he wouldn't have read five.
So just 5 years or 5 days or whatever, depending. But I wanted to say one last thing about this physical part, because Anthony mentioned the table, so speak about the table, and you mentioned the glass, yeah? So how counterintuitive it is that so we all agree, I hope, that tables and glasses are made of atoms. So forget strings, okay? So we know that they are made of atoms, okay? So how counterintuitive it is that the table is made up of atoms, and the atom is 95% or 96% empty space. How counterintuitive is that? An atom is mainly empty space in that little thing there, and the table is made up of atoms. So that atom is basically, that table is basically empty space. So you see, with this example, I want to give you just an example how things that are counterintuitive are not necessarily not true, okay, and not physical, you know. And if you apply this frame of mind then to other things like time, you start being a little bit more flexible with axioms, and you know.
But if you said that this table is not actually made of wood, it's made of empty space, you would be wrong, I think, because you're using the words in a different sense.
Of course,
and
definitely.
That's what I'm worried about.
No, you're right.
What you say about people coming back to you, that's fine. It's just that to use the language time goes slower or faster, or time reverses, which seems to me just simply contradictory, is a bad way of talking about the results of the experiment.
That's where physics needs philosophy to put the right question and give the right argument and construct it. But what we're told by scientists is this. This is what we're told. And we're told this, and I said it at the beginning of my talk, because we need to oversimplify sometimes to explain something to non-scientists. Scientists would put a lot of equations there, and they would all, if we were all scientists, we would all understand what he's trying to tell us. But in order to explain it to us, they use these words and concepts, and sometimes they're not as precise as the mathematics, for example, or, you know what I mean, or the experimental data that they would have. And they wouldn't be able to explain it to us, non-scientists, in another way.
But then we raise the questions about whether maths is real and what we're doing with these abstract notions. I just wanted to pick up, if I may, on something that supports something you said earlier, Sean, about that maybe it's the particle that's slowing down rather than us thinking about it going through time. And this idea we had of aging and what age you are. Now, there is a rare genetic disorder in which people age prematurely. So you can have a 4-year-old child who is the biological age of a 60-year-old because they've got this rare genetic disorder.
Well, therefore you add a qualifying adjective, biologically. The child, poor thing, in terms of time passing,
yes,
I use that as a term,
yes,
is 4 years old.
Yes.
The
yes.
body, the entropy, the disorder of the body, you know, has been accelerated by ailment of some sort, or a condition of some sort. Therefore, I think that's entirely different.
So you don't think that's the same as you saying that the problem was you slowing? Yeah, it's not. And yeah, because the time hasn't gone.
So
like the
condition,
the condition of the particle.
That which has caused it may not be anything biologically like what would happen to a body slowing down.
Yeah,
or not.
I know what's happening.
So I don't think there's a comparison. I think that's a very different way of looking at aging. But back to the comments about words. We're using aging because the person's skin looks wrinkled. What other term do we use? I think our language lets us down in so many instances.
Our language is designed really for describing ordinary three-dimensional objects in the middle-sized world. And so it's not really the fault of physicists, to be nice to them. It's not really the fault of physicists that the alternative to equations is to talk about things that are not cannot be talked about in terms of three-dimensional objects, as if they were three-dimensional objects. So when people talk about time as an entity with aspects and so on, they're talking as if time was like a bottle of water, you know, with colour and what have you. What colour is time? That's obviously a stupid question. But that's the sort of danger, I think, into which we step if we try and talk about these complicated physical things as if we were talking about physical objects. And that's why I think time slowing down sounds a bit makes sense, because it, you know, cars can slow down, I can slow down, and am doing so. But to say time slowing down sounds that it means something, but I'm not sure that it really does.
But the time dilation equation, that's what it's saying, basically.
Yes, but that's a way of putting the results of that equation into ordinary language, which may just be not adequate to the task.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I don't agree, but I know what you mean.
Alan, sorry. No, sorry. I come from the naive area, so I'm going to say perhaps may or may not make sense. But isn't there a relation between time and perception in the respect that back in the 1950s, as Bob will remember, people said it was absolutely impossible for the human body to run faster in a mile, run a mile faster than under 4 minutes. And yet that perception proved completely wrong. At least I hope the panel will agree that Roger Bannister did run a mile under 4 minutes. So isn't there a link between perception and time, the whole, throughout this, this conversation, and therefore perception is, I'm trying to think of the word, an unreliable way of measuring time?
Possibly.
Belief is an unreliable measure of truth, you might say.
And to address Adrian's concern about physics relating back to what is a philosophy, I wonder if you see any merit in Poland. So a lot of metaphysics talks about an underlying reality behind space-time, where time doesn't exist, so Plato being in Newman and Kant, the will, Schopenhauer. And they use a kind of intuition, and they see this wider scope of reality beyond space-time. And then when we look at the physics, there's bits of physics which are almost suggesting, you know, maybe time doesn't exist, maybe at a kind of deeper, the way we're looking at it, we kind of see it, but perhaps
there is this cube, it's all just there, and it's something to do with our current condition that makes us see it as passing. So in that way, could physics be almost supporting this deeper view? Because, of course, physics is literally the science of just looking within space-time, but it's kind of drawing these possible links to a broader...
That's a very intelligent question. very complicated one as well. What honestly, if I may answer, I am very impressed that some Hindu and maybe even pre-Hindu, maybe some legends and religions expressed. At that time, I mean 5,000, 6,000 years ago, expressed the cosmology with time, and you mentioned it as well with the Chinese, huh? Nearly the same way, like the big bounce now, like a cycle. For me, that is incredible how someone with no knowledge of physics could come up with something like that, like birth, death of the universe, and then rebirth 5,000, 6,000 years ago without any knowledge of science. For me, that means that there's something which we can't really grasp inside of us, which it's like a hidden knowledge, which makes their intuition. And physicists are now going back to that. It's incredible that Democritus thought of atoms. Where, I mean, say 4,000, 3,000 years ago, and then we go back to them and we say, oh, it's true, because don't forget, just before Einstein we weren't sure whether atoms existed. We weren't sure, it wasn't a fact, you know. So, what you're saying, I don't know whether I interpreted your question correctly. Where does this leave us then? It leaves us that this physics can't do without philosophy. And proper philosophy can't do without science. Okay, I said this to Marianne, I told you yesterday. To remain relevant, you can't have bioethics without the bio part, without the medical experience. Huh? You can't have philosophy of science without science.
And then one of the questions we have to ask ourselves is, what is science? Because, of course, it's undergone a lot of transitions in its definition as we've gone through history.
Yeah.
And what is a deeper level? mean, if somebody tells me at a deep level this table consists of empty space, I'd say they're off their head. There's a level at which this table consists mostly of empty space, and that's the level of... subatomic particles.
Yeah.
But that's not deeper level. I mean, you could say at a proper deep level it matters. this table is solid and made of wood. I think the idea that there's a deep level, in other words, something slightly mysterious and obscure, is perhaps a misnomer.
Yeah,
just a different thing.
Yeah. I know.
Then perhaps we're getting into the question of actual consciousness, what we're...
I wasn't, but...
but you would go that way when you're sort of tapping things and...
There's a theological explanation for everything.
Well, that's easy. Just invent one.
Right, so anybody else want any final points they want to make? Well, I'd like to give a big thank you to all of you for coming here today and making this conference possible. Big thank you to all of our speakers, because I think we've had four really tremendous talks. So, can we give all four of them? And also, once again, a huge thank you to Alan and Silky for the wonderful job they've done pulling this whole thing together.
What is it?